He's Hacker.
Talk about a fried egg. I lasted about 5 minutes out there. I said, to heck with this. I'll do this in the morning. And I don't have any inside information. The lady that did it, she got in there.
I mean,
she made it happen.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
And I do enjoy drinking cold beer at ballparks. So if that makes me a baseball fan, then I'm a diehard baseball fan.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Wednesday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM with Casey Dobson, who's in for Dylan Denmark. I'm the Hacker, Ryan Green. Glad you are with us. And what was a huge day for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Of course, Josh Allen, a five-year contract extension, $150 million. $88 million of that is guaranteed for Josh Allen. And what is a banner day for the Jaguar organization? Josh Allen becomes the first $100 million man in Jaguar history. And the Jaguars, for the third time going back over a decade, have re-signed a first-round pick to a second contract. As sad as that is accurate. Blake Bortles got an extra year, Tyson Alualu, and that is it for first-round picks going all the way back to 2010. Hopefully that is over with now. You look at Josh Allen getting a new deal. You know Trevor Lawrence is going to get a new deal. You know Travis Etienne is going to get a new deal. And one would expect Trayvon Walker and Anton Harrison to both get new deals. So a new day is here. And what an offseason it's been for the Jaguars. We'll dive into all that coming up tonight here on Hacker After Dark. Guest lineup looks like this, and we are absolutely jam-packed. In hour number one, in less than 15 minutes, Mike Jannetty is the founder of SpotTrack. SpotTrack is one of the, if not the, website about salary caps, contracts, you name it. What does the Josh Allen extension mean for the Jacksonville Jaguars? And what does it mean moving forward? Now, the salary cap hit has been lowered by some $13 million now in 2024. Potentially, could the Jaguars go out and maybe try to add, a wide receiver via trade now? The answer is yes, and Mike Jannetty will explain that to you. Jaguar fans, I think you'll find that very interesting. He comes up in less than 15 minutes. Also, former Jaguar Leon Searcy. You get him every day on XL Primetime. You get him weekly here during the year on Hacker After Dark. Leon's going to join me tonight to get his reaction on the Josh Allen contract extension. So a lot of guests coming up, a lot of Josh Allen talk over the next 2 hours, and we're certainly glad you're with us. Every night here on Hacker After Dark, we do kick it off with a big deal of the night and Casey Dobson. Let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
It's a huge deal. The Jacksonville Jaguars got Josh Allen locked up to a long-term contract. Now, did it happen when Jaguar fans wanted it to happen? No, it didn't. We wanted this to happen before free agency. It did not. And did it cost the Jaguars Calvin Ridley? More than likely. So you have to accept that, right? That's the reality. There's no going back and there's no changing that. But they did get it done with Josh Allen. A brand new five-year deal becomes the Jaguars' first $100 million man. $88 million of that is guaranteed for a 26-year-old defensive end coming off a year where he had 17 and a half sacks. 17 and a half sacks. Absolutely impressive. Earned the contract, and now he is signed long-term. I got a lot of thoughts on the contract. I got a lot of thoughts on what this means for the Jaguars and, quite frankly, what this means for Trent Baalke. Before we get there, let's let you hear a couple of thoughts from Josh Allen. He met the media earlier today down at the Miller Electric Center. And one of the things Josh Allen talked about was the job is not done. He won a lot of accolades last year, but he wants more here in Jacksonville And he made no bones about that when he met the media earlier today.
Job not done yet, you know, and that's why I want to tell the fan base, like, I'm extremely blessed and honored to get this paycheck or to get these checks, but I have to, you know, I still set goals for myself. I was defensive player of the year is my next goal, winning a Super Bowl, being the MVP of it.
Those are lofty expectations, and look, we would welcome all of that here in Jacksonville. Are you kidding me? You know, you think about the great defensive players in Jaguar history, Josh Allen's probably right at the top of the list now, right? I mean, not only were what he's done, the contract today, but what he will do in the future with at least five more years here in Jacksonville. The Jaguars, unfortunately, though, come into 2024 as once again maybe the hunter and not the hunted. Although maybe that's a good thing in retrospect. Obviously, everybody's going to be focusing on the Houston Texans. We know how much money Tennessee spent in free agency, and Indianapolis was a game outside of the playoffs last year. Josh Allen was asked earlier today how he sees the AFC South heading into 2024.
Now you look at our division, you know, it's gotten a lot more competitive, which I love, which brings a lot more national media to our division. We have a, when you look at every team has a premier quarterback. Now you look at the receiving core, you look at the offensive lines, you look at the running back rooms. You know, everybody's competing for the AFC South. And, you know, I still believe we're top dogs, and, you know, and I'm going to believe that.
I still believe we're top dogs. Interesting. A lot of people will not believe that. Like I've said, and I'm not breaking any news here, I would imagine when all the prognostications nationally begin happening, when those preseason magazines start hitting newsstands in May, June, and July, I would doubt very many, if any at all, will pick Jacksonville to win the AFC South. All of that praise, all of that hype will go to Houston. But that didn't seem to affect the Jaguars in 2022. Being the favorite in 2023, maybe that did affect Jacksonville a little bit. But Josh Allen still believes they're the best team in the division. Finally, Josh Allen. He's already been in Jacksonville 5 years. He gets a brand new 5-year extension today. He's only 10 sacks, I believe, behind Tony Brackens for the all-time career sack leading total in Jaguar history. And Josh Allen says he wants to leave an impact here in Duval County.
Coming here to Jacksonville, you know, 2017 was a year they almost went to the Super Bowl. Almost doesn't count. They had a great team, Jacksonville, great defense, you know, offense that was progressing. And then you move on to 18, they didn't have success. I came in at 19, you know, we 6-10, told myself, we can't get worse than this, you know, not understanding NFL, and then winning 3 games the next 2 years. And then Coach Peterson goes, we go to the playoffs and just, I mean, this is real, you know? Like, these are raw emotions that I'm giving you guys, and I'm honest, that, like, leaving, like, what can I do to leave an impact?
The thoughts of Josh Allen here today on 1010XL. Of course, that was down at the Miller Electric Center. Jaguars.com aired that. I certainly enjoyed watching that press conference, and I think it was raw emotion from a guy now who is set for life financially after getting $88 million guaranteed. He is the second highest paid edge rusher in the National Football League, I believe trailing only Nick Bosa the way it stands right now. Now, the Jaguar offseason, all right? We got 2 weeks till the draft, 2 weeks from tomorrow night. Understanding that Calvin Ridley is gone. All right, I get it. Calvin Ridley's gone. I will remind you that some of you 3 months ago did not like Calvin Ridley. Oh, he's not running the right routes, and he doesn't know the playbook, and he's taking, you know, targets away from Christian Kirk and Zay Jones. They're force-feeding Calvin Ridley the ball. Remember all that? Remember all that narrative about Calvin Ridley? And then something changed in like January and February, and people realized how good Calvin Ridley was 23 months out of football to come back and do what he did, and the narrative completely changed. All of a sudden, Calvin Ridley went from not knowing the playbook and running the wrong routes to being the second coming of Jerry Rice. So, accept the reality that Calvin Ridley is not here. Aside from that, this offseason's been perfect. It's been perfect. You re-sign Ezra Cleveland. You extend Foye Oluokun. You extend Josh Allen. You bring in difference makers like Eric Armstead on the D-line, Mitch Morse at center, Gabe Davis at wide receiver. You bring in good players like Darnell Savage, Devin Duvernay, Ronald Darby. You bring in a better backup quarterback in Mac Jones than what you had. You bring in Trevis Gibson's an under-the-radar guy that we don't even talk about. The guy had 10 sacks in 21 and 22 in Chicago. Are you kidding me? That's already an upgrade over Kalavon Chaisson in and of itself. I think it's been a very good offseason. It hadn't been great because Ridley's not here, and you have to just accept that. And now what's interesting is with this newfound cap room with the Josh Allen extension, could you kick the tires on a wide receiver? Brandon Ayuk conversation may come back. A T. Higgins conversation may start up. Dare I say, let's dream big and a Justin Jefferson conversation, or you simply take care of it in round one or round two of the NFL draft. Bottom line, whether you like Trent Baalke or whether you don't like Trent Baalke, at this point of the offseason, we'll see what happens in 2 weeks at the draft. But right now, on the 10th day of April in 2024, he gets a passing grade. I think he had a good free agent haul. He's done good work in re-signing guys. He's done good work in restructuring contracts to get more cap room. And he got Josh Allen done. Was it late? Sure. That's why he doesn't get a perfect grade. But he gets a passing grade because he got it done ultimately. 5 years, $150 million, $88 million guaranteed for what is now, no question, on the defensive side of the football, your defensive franchise guy is what Josh Allen is for the Jacksonville Jaguars. 641-1010 on the phone line and on the text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosures. We are absolutely jam-packed tonight. Leon Searcy comes up in less than 30 minutes. Coming up next, SpotTrack. That is the website. Contracts, salary cap. I want to talk Jaguar free agency. I want to talk about this Josh Allen extension and what it may mean for the Jaguars with this newfound cap room and what they could potentially do with it. Mike Jannetty is the founder of SpotTrack.com, and he joins me next. Hacker After Dark on a Wednesday evening in Jacksonville, Florida. And we're glad you're with us right here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Big news from the Jaguars today as Josh Allen gets a monster extension. 5 years, $150 million, $88 million of that is guaranteed as the 26-year-old defensive end is not going anywhere now for a long, long time. Let's talk about the extension, and let's also look ahead to maybe what the extension means when it comes to this Jaguar roster. With that, Mike Jannetty of SpotTrack. He is the founder of the website to go to when you talk about sports contracts. And Mike's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Mike, how we doing?
Doing well. Big news for sure.
It was big news to wake up to that this morning. Before we talk about what it means, Mike, just your thoughts, man. 5 years, $150 million, $88 million guaranteed. Josh Allen here in Jacksonville.
Right. Kind of a late bloomer here, and certainly played the last two seasons like a player that deserved to be resetting this market, which to some degree is what he's done here. We've got that Nick Bosa contract kind of hanging out there as a unicorn, and everybody else has kind of fallen underneath it. But the move that Brian Burns made from Carolina to New York and the subsequent extension was sort of the plate for everybody else to eat off of here. And that's exactly what this Josh Allen contract looks like, right? $30 million a year, slightly more in terms of practical guarantees from the initial reports. Sounds like it's going to be basically a carbon copy of what the Giants have just done. And I kind of get that. I think those are two teams maybe playing on the same island right now in terms of roster construction and where things are headed and coaching, and there's a lot of similarities there. So I get why this player's under contract for probably 3 years fully guaranteed when we see these details, and now it's about what else can happen in Jacksonville.
He is the first $100 million man in the history of the Jaguar franchise, which is pretty crazy. That'll last a matter of months probably till Trevor Lawrence gets his extension. But you feel this is good value for a player of Josh Allen's caliber?
I don't know if value is the term I would use. I'm not sure mathematically speaking from a production standpoint that this is a player that should be considered second, third, fourth guarantees, defensively speaking. I get, though, when you connect him to this franchise specifically and where this franchise wants to be for the next three seasons, that changes things. And when you're talking about getting a player off a franchise tag he was probably never going to sign in the first place, it takes a little bit more to get there. So I wouldn't say value is the right word. I would say they did what they had to do to get this job done quickly, right? Because we're nowhere near that July 15th deadline, which says to me, we want him under contract. We want a lower cap hit now. We want to be able to do some things over the next couple of weeks, whether that's more free agent additions, whether that's a trade, whether that's being able to fit our rookie draft class in. But I like the timing and the number I can live with for sure. Let's put it that way.
Mike Gennetti of SpotTrack. All right, you've piqued some interest here. Now, like you said, July 15th was the deadline. We're 3 months before that. They get it done in the early part of April. The draft is 2 weeks away, but a lot of talk, Mike, that this now lowers that cap hit so the Jaguars have more flexibility, more room. What are your thoughts on that aspect of it?
For sure. That's always a big part. It's probably why we've seen five extensions from these franchise tags as it is, and even one out of a transition tag in New England. So teams are getting smarter with this. They don't want to carry those big, hefty franchise tag salary cap hits for any longer than they absolutely need to. So if it's 24 and change right now, which is what that franchise tag was for Josh Allen, a signing bonus structure with a minimum salary can get this thing down into the sevens and eights, depending on how they do this with maybe a couple of bonuses like we've seen Jacksonville do in the past. So significant savings in terms of what they may open up here over the next couple of days when things become officially official. And then you're talking about really $50 million or so of practical cap space heading toward what could be the fourth wave of free agency, or maybe the second wave of the trade market, if that's how you want to kind of read things right now. So, it's not an insurance or assurance that they're going to be in another big move behind this, but they are certainly comfortable, financially speaking, heading towards April.
There's a lot of talk here about getting another wide receiver. They added Gabe Davis, and I'll get your thoughts on the free agent class in a moment, but we've heard Brandon Ayuk, right? We've heard T. Higgins. Justin Jefferson, I think, is a pipe dream, but you even hear that. Would, hypothetically, with this move from Josh Allen, if they were to find a trade partner, they would have enough room to not only bring in a wide receiver of that caliber, but give that wide receiver an extension on top of it?
Yeah, they sure do. Now, it's a very deep, deep class, so there's some battling heads here in terms of the thought process of how teams should operate. But teams like Buffalo, who just moved on from Stephon Diggs, they're in the same conundrum, right? They're probably one notable wide receiver short. I'd put Jacksonville in that conversation, though not as drastically as what Buffalo may be looking at right now. And quite frankly, Jacksonville has a better crop of picks to dangle out there for a player like Brandon Ayuk. So they may be the leader in the clubhouse in terms of what we can project San Francisco might be looking for. If we're talking about maybe a second or a third round pick to bring him in on a 4-year extension, they certainly have the cap space to acquire that fifth year option, the $14 million or so option that IU currently has. So the timing would be in their favor at this point. But I would absolutely put Jacksonville at the top of the list for notable trades, though I don't know that T. Higgins is one of those players.
There's a lot of branches to this, Mike. Obviously, next year, Tyson Campbell is up. Andre Sisco is up. We know ETN is coming up. We know Lawrence is coming up. They're going to have to spend a lot of money to keep their own guys in-house. How does what they did with Josh Allen today maybe help them down the road when it comes to those in-house guys?
Yeah, so it's definitely a flag in the ground that they are not going backwards. They're certainly still with the foot on the gas pedal. So those names you're mentioning should feel great that they're in this conversation right now, because it seems like, outside of a disastrous 2024 season, all of those names should be locking in multi-year extensions within the next 18 months. I think that's pretty safe to say. And all of those names sit in position groups where the money is getting pretty crazy over the past couple of years of both free agency and extensions. So I would expect this to be an aggressive roster, an aggressive team. This is maybe just the start of that. And I do think they've been aggressive in free agency as well. So all the signs say, hey, we're not going anywhere. And to me, it would only take a disastrous record in 2024 and maybe, you know, a really bad look in terms of where the division is around them to change that mindset. But this is a flag on the ground moment for this franchise, you know, sort of like what they had a couple of years ago when they made that AFC championship run and were kind of forced into a couple of contracts maybe they didn't want to do in the first hand. A
couple more from Mike Gennetti. He is the founder of Spot Track. He's with us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Mike, you and I talked prior to free agency. We didn't have all the answers at that point. We have a lot of them now. Very active free agent period. How would you assess not only the talent, but the contracts that were given out to the likes of Eric Armstead, Mitch Morse, Gabe Davis, just to name a few?
Aggressive. That's still the word I'm going to use. You know, they didn't go to the top of the market with really anybody. You know, a few of those names are sort of somebody else's trash, and that's not the way to look at it, right? It is just simply cap casualties in a couple of instances and maybe some bad situations from a situational standpoint. But aggressive, almost $83 million guaranteed against $137 million. That's a big-time number. So I'd say that they were looking for the right names, maybe that second-tier free agency, and it was about depth more than it was about bringing in one or two players that maybe, you know, can put some butts in seats in terms of, you know, fan excitement. And less about that, more about stability, which is a good move for a team in the offseason.
I thought the Gabe Davis contract was fine, $13 million a year. That's gotten panned nationally. And quite frankly, Mike, I don't understand that. What's your thought there?
Now, honestly, it's exactly what our math says it should have been, which means it's probably low, right? If we're talking about a free agent wide receiver, if they're getting what the math says they're supposed to get, it probably means they took a little bit less than they probably could have gotten if they'd done a little bit more homework, honestly. So yeah, I would say that, yeah, we saw 3 to 4 wide receiver contracts come in right about there, and then certainly Calvin Ridley changed that mindset quite a bit. But, you know, apples to apples, I think most of these wide receiver contracts are fair, and it goes to what we've been saying. It's a deep draft class. There's trade options. There's sort of wide receivers coming at you everywhere. So why would you overpay for one singular name at any point in time this offseason?
I want to end with the Jaguars, but quickly, you mentioned Ridley. Tennessee had $1 billion, and they spent it this offseason. Look, Ridley got huge money. Legarius Sneed got huge money. Cushenberry got huge money. What was your thought on the Titans as far as the spending spree, and what have they done as far as moving themselves forward? Do they still have a lot of cap room, or is a lot of that gone now?
They still do. You're right. They started with a heck of a lot, and they still kind of have a heck of a lot, like almost $32 million of top 51 space. So in terms of Ridley specifically, and I'd even throw, you know, the Sneed and the Pollard contracts in there, because I think they're sort of 1ABC here. Everything about those three contracts to me is slightly overpaid, even though I love especially Sneed or joining that franchise. They were uber aggressive. They were $5 to $10 million guaranteed more than probably other teams were offering just to ensure that they got their guys. And quite frankly, they're able to do that because they must believe in Will Levis, and he's got 2 more years of absolute cost control on his contract before they even have to start discussing $100 million guaranteed. So it's the right time to do that. Whether it works or not remains to be seen, but I understand that team specifically going this route.
The Texans probably did the same thing, right? Danielle Hunter,
right.
You bring in Stephon Diggs. Now, the Diggs thing is weird, right? Because that's basically now only a 1-year deal for him in Houston, correct?
That's right. They chopped off 3 years, sweetened the pot a little bit, made it a 1-year deal. It's not something we see often, right? You know, most teams like to have term. The Dallas Cowboys are still looking for 9-year contracts out of most of their players. A lot of these younger GMs have changed their mindset. They are literally trying to lock in players within their window. And right now, Houston's window is 2 years. It is what CJ Stroud's cost control comes with, right? And then everything else has to change. So I get it. I don't know if it's the right move, right? I think I would push some of these players out and try to get some value at the back end of contracts where I could. With this one specifically, with Diggs' age and possibly some lingering injury history, I get this one. Let's just get one max year out of it, and then we'll deal with it in 2025 when we need to.
All right, Mike, final question for Jaguar fans just joining us. I thought you said some really interesting things. Josh Allen gets the franchise tag off of him. that now lowers the cap hit. And in your opinion, and you're the guy, right? SpotTrack is the website when it comes to for these contracts and moving forward in the salary cap. It is your opinion that you feel if, and it's a big if, but if Jacksonville would want to pursue a Brandon Ayuk or somebody like that, this contract now with Josh Allen gives them the flexibility and able to pursue that potentially.
No question. Whether it's Ayuk, whether it's an offensive lineman, you know, both needs, I think, that are carrying into the draft here. I absolutely believe that part of this conversation and part of the timing of this happening right now is to give them the ability to at least go out and shop. And whether it gets done or not remains to be seen. But for sure, they are now, from a cap space standpoint, from a draft asset standpoint, one of the teams I'd put at the top of the list to be able to acquire somebody.
Very interesting. Mike Jannetty of SpotTrack. Mike, tell the good folks here in Jacksonville about SpotTrack and what they can look forward to when they head on over to the website.
Yeah, SpotTrack.com is where you can find everything financially speaking with all these sports, from the NFL all the way down to the National Women's Soccer League at this point. Everything's sort of in vogue right now. So we're covering as much as possible across the spectrum, and it's at SpotTrack on Twitter.
Mike, I know you're very busy. Thank you for joining us on short notice, brother. We certainly appreciate it.
My pleasure.
There you go. Mike Jannetty, the founder of SpotTrack. Interesting stuff. The Jaguars re-signing Josh Allen. They saved basically $13 million against the 2024 cap by doing that. Now, they don't have to spend that money, right? Nothing says they have to, but they also now potentially have room to investigate maybe a wide receiver. Maybe the Ayuk rumors will start back up. Maybe the T. Higgins rumors will start back up. Or potentially they feel all right with Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, Zay Jones, Devin Duvernay, Parker Washington, and potentially drafting, say, a Brian Thomas out of LSU in round one or somebody in round two. So there's a lot of different avenues you could go, but great news on two ends. You get Josh Allen signed long-term, so your franchise defensive player is now happy, he's paid, and he's here for at least 5 years, and you free up some room in 2024 to potentially add to this 2024 roster. Will they do it? Well, that's left to be seen, but they have the opportunity to do it. And certainly want to thank Mike Jannetty, the founder of SpotTrack, for joining us today on short notice to recap the Josh Allen contract extension. Speaking of that Josh Allen contract extension, let's go talk to my buddy Leon Searcy. You hear him every day on XL Primetime. You get him weekly here during the NFL season on Hacker After Dark, or for big moments like this. What did Leon think of $150 million for Josh Allen? Plus, I haven't really talked to Leon since free agency. I want to talk about Arik Armstead. I want to talk about Mitch Morse, the changes to this Jaguar roster, and what does he think potentially in the draft the Jaguars need to do, which is 15 nights from tonight. Round number one, the Jaguars hold the 17th pick in the draft. Of course, they have five selections in the top 116, a first rounder, a second rounder, a third rounder, and two fourth rounders. And those are the five, right? Those are the five picks. You need to take guys in those spots that will contribute to this 2024 Jaguar football team. It is a Wednesday night in Jacksonville, Florida. We're glad you're with us. Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Let's talk Jaguars. Let's talk Josh Allen. Let's do it with Leon Searcy next here on Hacker After Dark.
This is Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Love is like a bomb, 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 bomb. Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Boy, a big day for the Jacksonville Jaguars as they sign Josh Allen to a five-year contract extension, $150 million, $88 million of that is guaranteed. Josh Allen now becomes the first Jaguar in 30 years to be a $100 million man. Let's talk to a man that played for the Jacksonville Jaguars, one of the best to ever do it in a Jaguar uniform, my buddy Leon Searcy. You hear him every day on XL Primetime, and he's always kind enough to join us here on Hacker After Dark. Leon, how we doing, man?
Man, I'm doing great, bro.
Leon, it's been a while. Good to talk with you again. And boy, we woke up to the news this morning. 5 years, $150 million for Josh Allen. Before we really dive in, just your thoughts on Josh Allen now staying in Jacksonville for at least the next 5 years.
Well, you know what, Hack? I mean, listen, I think the contract's well-deserved. I think Josh Allen bet on himself. He couldn't get a deal done before the start of the season, so he said, you know what? I'm going to go out, I'm going to show up, I'm going to show out, and I'm going to prove to the Jaguars I'm worth every penny that I'm asking for. So he wouldn't have did it himself. You know, when you bet on black and you win, I mean, it's like Vegas. You walk away with the money. So I'm glad that the Jaguars and Josh Allen's agency or whoever he had working with came to terms. And $88 million is just a little bit more than what Brian Burns got. I think Brian Burns got $87.5 million guaranteed, and Josh Allen got $88 million guaranteed. So that's good. The key is the guaranteed money. So, yeah, I'm happy for the organization. And I tweeted this. I mean, this sends shockwaves to the locker room where if you show up and you show out, you get paid, bottom line. And so those guys that are going into their last year deals, you know, the Ciscos, the Tyson Campbells of the world, the Walker Littles, that's the standard. The standard is Josh Allen. Josh Allen had 17 and a half sacks. He was considered one of the elite pass rushers in the NFL. And if you want to get paid like one of the elites, you got to play like one of the elites. So guys going into the last year of their deals, they recognize the standard that's been set by Josh, and hopefully they can accommodate it.
Yeah, I saw you tweeted that, and I wanted you to elaborate on that. You certainly can speak to this better than most. You were in NFL locker rooms for over a decade playing at the highest level. The message that sends, taking care of your own, because let's be honest, Leon, Josh Allen, other than Blake Bortles, is the first rounder for the Jaguars to get a second contract since Tyson Alualu. That is ridiculous, but maybe now the guard will change because you figure Trevor's going to be soon to follow. ETN, Trayvon Walker, Anton Harrison start building up that rapport and that core of this team. But elaborate on the message it sends into the locker room that the Jaguars now are beginning to take care of their own in-house guys.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to take care of the guys that you drafted. Listen, I always talked about you got to feed the family first. You know, it's all right to go out there and get free agents and bring them in and set the table for them to eat. But the guys, the core group of the guys that you drafted and developed, you got to feed them first. It's important that if you draft well and you develop them well and they perform well, then you got to pay them well. So Josh Allen is, like you said, he's one of the rare guys that the Jaguars drafted, developed, and paid. So all those other guys, the Trevor Lawrences of the world, the Ciscos, the Tyson Campbells, the Walker Littles, those guys that the Jaguars drafted and developed, now they got to go out and pay well. They got to go out there and play well. And if they play well, then hopefully the Jaguars will pay them well. But I think Josh Allen set the standard, so to say, that not only did he play well, he played at an elite level. I mean, you're talking about a guy who finished in the, top three as far as sacks go in the NFL. So if guys want to get paid like the elites in the NFL, play like the elites. So it was very refreshing for me to see the Jaguars reward Josh Allen because, you know, the template was early on in his career is that, oh, yeah, his rookie year, he had a lot of sacks because, you know, Calais Campbell was next to him and he helped him out. Well, he didn't have no Calais Campbell this year. Most of those sacks that were concurred by him had a lot to do with him, you know, getting off the ball and being offensive lineman. So good for Josh Allen, good for his camp, but also good for the locker room because now I think he set the bar so high. It's attainable, but I'm glad that he set the bar high.
Former Jaguar Pro Bowl offensive tackle Leon Searcy here with us on Hacker After Dark. Leon, you and I haven't spoken since the Jaguars signed Eric Armstead, and now that Allen's deal is done, now you can start salivating a little bit, right? Eric Armstead, Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen. You know, you think about Devon Hamilton hopefully comes back healthy. Roy Robertson-Harris, maybe an under-the-radar Trevis Gibson, who the Jaguars signed, who had 7 sacks in Chicago a couple of years ago. All of a sudden, you look at this D-line, Leon, and it looks like it could be pretty good, man.
It could be. You said a lot of great names, you know, with the defensive front. My only concern is their health. You know, if they can stay healthy and they have a nice little rotation, not only at the defensive front, I still believe that maybe we need another DN, not in the first round or maybe the second, maybe, you know, a late bloomer in the third, you know, a good rotational guy that could give us. And now Armstead, don't get me wrong, Armstead can move. He can rush you from the three to five or even possibly the end. So he could be a nice rotational guy at the end position. But, I will still might like to see maybe them get a nice little stud rushing on the outside. But that, you know, that's not really, in my opinion, that's not really a priority as far as the first two picks go. I still think O-line. I still think DB are, you know, the main priorities for this team moving forward now that we've got all these guys signed up.
You know, you look at the Jaguar offseason, right? And obviously Calvin Ridley was the one that I guess got away. But good heavens, if you would have told me back when you and I talked right before free agency, all right, they were going to sign Mitch Morse and Eric Armstead and Gabe Davis and Darnell Savage and Ronald Darby and Devin Duvernay, and they were going to get the Josh Allen deal done, and they were going to bring back Ezra Cleveland. Man, I mean, it's been a good offseason. Now, people are going to point to Ridley, and obviously that's warranted. He was a good player. I will remind people he's going to be 30 in December, and Tennessee, in my opinion, way overpaid for him. So the Ridley situation maybe clouds it a little bit. But, Leon, I'm pretty impressed, honestly, with what Balky has done so far this offseason. What's your thought there?
Yeah, I am, too. I'm impressed with, some of the talent that he brought in the free agent. And some of the acquisitions, quite frankly, have playoff experience. And, I think that was done on purpose. I think specifically for the fact that this team last year, contrary to how they played in 2022, this team last year folded their tent, at the crucial moments of when you started to play your best football. And that might have been from lack of experience of guys who haven't been in those situations as far as playoff push goes. And maybe they didn't have the clientele to kind of pull guys up by their bootstraps and say, hey, listen, let's fix this remedy and see how we can finish the season strong. And I think going into free agency, I think even Doug Peterson said it. Doug Peterson said going into free agency, we made an effort to go after guys who have been in playoff games, who won divisions, who played in Super Bowls. So he brought in some of that experience into the locker room. So hopefully, with this season, manifesting before our eyes, that we don't put ourselves in the same situation like last year to where the end of the season we don't have the experience to kind of pull ourselves together and finish strong.
Couple more for Leon Searcy. You hear him every day on primetime. You get him here on Hacker After Dark. Leon, a couple more Jaguar thoughts. Number one, your position, the offensive line. It looks pretty set in stone now that going into the year, the projected starting lineup is Cam Robinson, Ezra Cleveland, Mitch Morse, Brandon Sheriff, Anton Harrison. Your thoughts on that unit?
Listen, I'm okay with it. I know Doug Peterson made a comment during the offseason that, the unit that he had last game of the season against the Titans is a unit that wasn't able to function together for the mass majority of the season because of injuries. That unit sucked against the Titans. They were absolutely terrible. Okay,
so tell us how you really feel, Leon.
Don't give me that backdrop that we didn't get a chance to all play together because that backdrop of that unit was terrible. So I'm not overly impressed or excited about that unit right now. I still think we need a formidable stud offensive lineman, some youth on the offensive line, someone that brings a little nasty. I mean, you got to remember, had down the stretch, especially in the month of December, this team didn't just lose. They got physically beat up on both sides of the ball. That's concerning to me. And if you're telling me Cam Robinson, Ezra, Mitch Moore, and you're talking to Mitch Morris, and then you're talking Sheriff and Anton Harrison, I mean, I'm okay with it. I mean, I still think that this team can get a stud offensive lineman in the first or the second round that could bring a little attitude and change the temperature in the room in that offensive line meeting room.
You know, I remember when you and I used to talk about Juwan Taylor when he was here, and you've wanted to get the moniker the best right tackle in team history. You've wanted to give that away to a couple of guys, and no one's ever taken it from you. You're clearly the best right tackle that's ever played for the Jaguars. Juwan Taylor certainly didn't take that away. What is your thought on Anton Harrison coming into year two? Because by all indications, he was really solid his rookie year, and if he improves, man, I mean, maybe the sky is the limit for that kid.
Well, listen, you're right. I've held on to the annals of being the best right tackle in Jaguars way too long. I'm ready to give it up, absolutely. And I think I did Juwan Taylor in, to be quite honest with you. I remember about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, we had him on the show on XL Primetime, and I told him, I said, I was ready to pass the torch after his rookie year because he had such an outstanding rookie year. And then he busted the next 2 years. Now, he finished strong in his last season. But, I mean, overall, you know, he had a solid rookie year and maybe final season in Jacksonville. Anton Harrison has the same potential. I mean, he's got good footwork. He's physical with his hands. I think he grew into his own actually after a beating. Sometimes you say you can never learn from a spanking, but you can, you know, learn from that. That when he went up against Chris Jones was probably his worst performance. Now, that was well expected that, you know, he would give up. Well, I think he gave up a sack and a half or maybe two sacks against Chris Jones. I mean, that was a baptized by fire. You go up against a guy like that. But after that game, you know, he showed promise, you know, because I always say that when you can either learn or let it linger. And he learned from it, and he got better. He worked on his fundamentals work. He, in my opinion, he was probably the most consistent offensive lineman on the line. I mean, as far as blocks go, run blocking and pass protection, now he had tendencies to whiff on blocks and overextend on blocks and maybe overextend on pass rushes. But, I mean, that just comes with time and experience. So I'm looking for a banner year for him. I saw the game against when he played against the Texans. It was a formidable task to go up against Will Anderson. Those two times he played him, he shut him down. He didn't get any sacks on him, home and away. So, listen. If you want to be one of the greats, you know, at the position, at the right tackle position, you've got to answer the bell when it rings. And I think for the most part, this kid has done an outstanding job, and I'm going to be looking forward to him playing even better this season.
Leon Searcy here with us. Leon, as we begin to wrap up, the NFL draft is 2 weeks from tomorrow. You've said offensive tackle and defensive back. A lot of people are saying DB and wide receiver. What are your thoughts on those three positions in particular? Offensive tackle, I think, makes sense because you don't know what the future holds for Cam Robinson and Walker Little. They're free agents after the 24 season. Wide receiver makes sense because you're trying to replace Ridley, I guess, right? And DB makes sense because you really don't know how Darnell Savage is going to play in the nickel, which means all you have is Tyson Campbell and Ronald Darby. Bottom line, there are still some holes that need to be filled, and the Jaguars need to draft well here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the first three picks are essential to me. I mean, they can go in either order for me, to be quite honest with you, but you've got to hit on those three picks. I mean, what is it, 17, 48, and 96? Those are our first three picks, right?
Yeah, so, and they also have 114 and 116, so two pretty early fourth-rounders.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, 17, 48, 96, you can't miss on like last year. Okay, last year, you know, Tank Bigsby and Strange didn't play. They played, but it was sporadically, and then they didn't have much success at it. These guys right here that you're picking at 17, 48, and 96, and maybe 114 and 116, These guys got to contribute day one. I mean, I don't care. As far as the first three picks, they can go in either position. They can go wide receiver, corner, lineman, or corner, wide receiver, lineman, whatever it may be. I just want to see those three positions taken care of essentially within those first three picks. I don't care which order they come in. I just know what I feel. In my opinion, those are needs. A DB, wide receiver, and offensive line. Now, wherever you decide to pick them, I'm fine with that, but they have to be addressed in the draft come April 25th on Thursday night.
Leon, final question, about 60 seconds. You were a first-round pick back in 1992. What's it like for right now for guys that are projected to go in round one? We're 2 weeks outside of the draft. Most of the interviews are over. Most of the visits are over. Are guys just chomping at the bit, waiting for the day to arrive?
Yeah, when I was in that position about 2 weeks ago, first of all, you got to remember I was in Miami, so ain't no telling what I was doing down there. but you know what? You get an opportunity to kind of exhale, because you got to remember, January, I'd won a national championship. That late January, I'm at the East-West Shrine Game. In February, I'm at the Combine. In March, I'm at my Pro Day. So and all those experiences are exhausting, not only physically but mentally, because you understand that it's like Idol. It's like you're auditioning for a job to play in the NFL. And then once all that experience is over, when it comes to April, you just sit back and you wait, for that golden ticket. And it's exciting and exhilarating, but it's also stressful, because we don't have the 24-hour sports cycle that they have now. Every end of the week, I'm looking at the big board, Mel Kiper and Bill Bart, Bushholm, where they got Cersei at. Cersei's at 20, Cersei's at 10, So the fluctuation of where you go is not an exact science. So all you can do right now is spend time with your family, thank God for the opportunity, and feel grateful that you are going to experience something as great as the NFL.
Crazy time of year, 2 weeks out from the NFL draft. And, of course, today the Jaguars making big news, signing Josh Allen to a 5-year deal worth $150 million. Leon Searcy, you get him every day on primetime. You get him here as well on Hacker After Dark. Leon, appreciate it, brother. Thank you as always. We'll talk again soon.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
That's right. We'll take you up to 10 o'clock tonight. 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, former Florida Gator, All-American tight end Ben Troop. Not only was Ben Troop an All-American at Florida, he spent 5 years in the National Football League with the Tennessee Titans. Ben is going to come on, not only talk about the Titans offseason, Calvin Ridley, Legarius Sneed, the great additions they have made. We're going to talk about Josh Allen. Ben's got some really interesting thoughts about Josh Allen, about Trayvon Walker. I think you'll be interested in hearing what Ben Troop has to say. And also, the Orange and Blue game is Saturday down in Gainesville as Billy Napier caps off year 3 of spring football down there with the Gators. So we'll talk about all of that with Ben Troop coming up towards the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour. Coming up in less than 10 minutes, my buddy Joe Cowart. You get him every day on XL Primetime. We'll talk Jags, but we are about 10 hours away from tee times at Augusta National. The 2024 Masters Tournament begins tomorrow morning. Joe is obviously a great resource when it comes to the game of golf, particularly for me. So we're going to talk a little Tiger Woods, a little Phil Mickelson, Scottie Scheffler, LIV versus PGA, John Rahm, the defending champion, and everything going on at the Masters. Joe Cowart comes up in less than 10 minutes. Again, big news today, Josh Allen, a brand new contract extension here in Jacksonville. We'll keep him here for at least 5 years. Now the question is, with the added cap room the Jaguars have, will they do anything with it here in 2024? Or are they going to sit pat, wait till the draft, see how the chips fall in 2 weeks, and then reassess? A lot to dive into and a lot of player movement. The Jaguars are one of the most active teams of the NFL offseason. I think they've had a very good NFL offseason, quite frankly, and the draft 2 weeks from now will basically be the cherry on top. And then after that, they report back and OTAs are in the middle of May as on-the-field work will begin for the 2024 season. It is a Wednesday night here on Hacker After Dark. We're glad you're with us on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. Joe Coward from XL Primetime talking Jags and previewing the 2024 Masters. He's coming up next.
He's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Boy, what a week in the world of sports. The Masters begins tomorrow morning as they will tee off at Augusta National. We got the NBA playoffs on the horizon. We just crowned a college basketball national champion, and we had some gigantic news earlier today with the Jacksonville Jaguars. With that, let me welcome in my buddy Joe Coward. You hear him every day on XL Primetime from 2 to 4. He's always kind enough to join us here on Hacker After Dark. Joe C., how we doing?
I'm doing good, man. It's a great week. You know that. I love the year's first major. That's not to dismiss the players, but the Masters is still the Masters. But here in Duval, somebody just got paid.
Yeah, we're going to dive into the Masters in a moment. But before we do that, the big story of the day, Josh Allen, 5 years, $150 million. $88 million of that is guaranteed as Trent Baalke locks up a first-round pick. And, Joe, other than Blake Bortles, you have to go back to Tyson Alualu to find the last guy from the first round that got a second contract here in Jacksonville. Jaguar fans, I think, should be pretty happy right now.
Yeah, look, it's been a disastrous run from Gene Smith to Dave Caldwell. And Trent is only going to get credit because he just happened to be there when this team sucked so bad. They got the number one pick 2 years running. And then he did hit a home run, you would say, with a late first-round pick in Anton Harrison last year. But that was also a need because of the Cam Robinson suspension. But the bottom line is your point is well taken because – they have sucked at the draft with top 10 picks. And we're talking from 2008 on. And just look at so few that stick around and are worth paying to stick around. Other ones you're just saying goodbye, see ya. Don't want to watch you wear the uniform and play anymore. And that goes from Derek Harvey to Luke Jokel, on and on and on. And so, yeah, finally they got a guy that fell in their laps because the Raiders, let's remind everybody, Hack, the Raiders, thank God for Mike Mayock. He decided to pick Cleveland Farrell, fourth overall, the first Russian that came off the board that year. And then after that, Daniel Jones went to the New York Football Giants. Dave Gettleman made that decision. And Josh Allen, wearing that Jaguar, that beautiful Jaguar sport coat, fell into Jacksonville's lap. And he has played well. He's deserving of it. I said when everyone was all kind of fired up about not paying him before they had to put the tag on him, every single day Josh Allen was not getting paid, he was making more money. And today is the evidence of that, $30 million per.
You get Joe Coward every day on XL Primetime. He's with us here on Hacker After Dark. And, Joe, what does it say, 30 years as a franchise for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Josh Allen becomes the first $100 million man. Now it won't last long, right? Because Trevor is going to be soon to follow. But for the here and now, as you and I are talking, Josh Allen, the first Jaguar in history to get $100 million.
Yeah, it's my drop that we always play on the show, huge nasty cash, because that's what it is. And it's hard to believe that a top flight Russian is making more actually than Josh Allen, but he got the $88 million guaranteed. But you know, there are guys right now that are tipping the scales at 30 and beyond, rushing the passer. We're talking about the next big contract, say, for a Trevor, a Tua, whomever it might be. They might be looking at $50 million a year and then some guaranteed. You already have had the Deshaun Watson deal, the Herbert deal, the Mahomes deal, you know, all that stuff. And, yeah, it's crazy to think the amount of money that's being thrown around in professional sports right now.
Joe, final thought on the Jags before we get to the Masters. You and I haven't spoken since free agency. Look, the Jaguars were one of the most active teams, right? They brought in a lot of guys, certainly some guys departed, either being released or signing elsewhere, including, of course, Calvin Ridley. But what did you make of the last couple of weeks with both the additions and the subtractions for this Jaguar roster?
Well, I don't mind too many of the departures. I would have loved to have seen Calvin Ridley come back. I thought he was still one of the potential biggest playmakers on this team. He made more plays than people are willing to give him credit for last year. It still wasn't 100% of what you'd like to see from Calvin. Anyway, I was bummed that he left. $20 million is still a big price tag to pay per year. Tennessee gave him $50 million guaranteed. So, okay, you just got to roll the dice and say, hey, we tried. We just can't keep him. But then when you see the other moves, like, say, the Texans have made, going and getting Danielle Hunter, Danico Autry, Joe Mixon, and then, of course, the move last week to bring Stephon Diggs in, you can't help but take notice. So you look at that haul, and then you look at Jacksonville's haul, and you're like, well, the Eric Armstead signing is – good, but not great because he's a little long in tooth. Gabe Davis was never really a one. Is he going to come in here and how much, you know, can he change the wide receiver room? I think overall, Hack, Balky did a decent job. He has brought in basically, including re-signing Josh Allen, out of the 9 free agents, let's include 41 in that conversation, he now has 7 starters out of those 9 signings. That tells you how bad they were as far as finding draft picks to fill those starting spots, but it also means that they're going to have contributions right away from these players. So I'm going to give Balky a B right now in the free agent department. He needs to pick up what he's done in the draft department, though.
There is speculation among Jaguar fans. This actually frees up some cap room, believe it or not, for the Jaguars in 2024. The cap number was going to be in excess of $20 million on the tag. We don't have the official numbers yet, but the speculation, this might free up anywhere from $9 to $10 million for the Jaguars now getting Allen signed. Whether it's Brandon Ayuk or whomever, Joe, because they have that extra cap room now, do you anticipate, what are your thoughts about maybe exploring another trade for a wide receiver?
Yeah, I still think it's out there. I think the T. Higgins conversation could be had. I think the Ayuk conversation could be had. I love Brandon Ayuk. I mean, that guy is cat quick, comes across the middle, gets open. He's a very, very good player. And I don't think the wide receiver room is 100% full. I think that's why a lot of people are mocking a receiver to the Jags. I'll ask you this question, which I've been asking on XL Primetime, and I'm a little bit in the minority. Gabe Davis is a good signing, but is this wide receiver room better than it was last year?
No,
I don't think so.
Yeah, I compare it to 2022. I think it's better. I think Gabe Davis is better than Marvin Jones, but Kirk and Zay are 2 years older, but I don't think it's better than it was last year.
Yeah, and Zay has not had a complete season. He's had injuries, and he was good in 22. He missed basically half of this past season, and you don't know 100% how healthy he's going to be. You hope he is, but you don't know. And so for that alone, I look at this wide receiver room as capable but not dynamic. I think Gabe Davis can come in, really, really be a good addition. But they're not dynamic, bro. They have got to make sure that Kirk stays healthy, Zay stays healthy, Evan Engram keeps doing what he's been doing from the tight end position. But you just don't have that deep threat on this roster right now. At least I don't think you do.
Couple of more for Joe Cowart. All right, the Masters. This is why we wanted you on before the Josh Allen news broke. You're certainly the golf guy here at 1010XL. And look, I mean, I love it. I'm a casual golf fan. You know that. But I will be absolutely locked in for the next 4 days watching this thing. I can't wait for the ceremonial tee shot tomorrow morning before the tournament begins with Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player. I think that's one of the great moments, not only in golf, but really in all of sports in the calendar year. What are your thoughts heading into another tournament there at Augusta National?
There's so many things that you could look at when it comes to trying to break it down. This is the return of the LIV guys against the PGA Tour guys. That is going to be front and center. A season ago, the winner was part of the PGA Tour and Jon Rahm. He's now not. He's part of LIV. And so that definitely is going to be a conversation. I'm looking at the number of players that are coming over from that Saudi circuit, and there definitely are a lot of big names. I want to say I believe it might have been four of the top 7 last year were from the LIV side, but I don't necessarily think that'll be the same this year. You're going to have Scottie Scheffler playing well. We know that if he can roll it, he is money. He's been so good since his last green jacket and his last two players titles. So he will be there. You certainly can expect Rahm to be there. And then we get to see Brooks Koepka played well last year, faded in the final day. Is he going to be up there? He's not been playing great on the live of late, but still, you know how good he is. And then you got all the other suspects that should step up and be worthy picks. I'll tell you this one cat that people don't know about, Ludvig Åberg. He is a Swede that played at Texas Tech, and he is talented. This will be his first Masters. He's going to draw some good odds. There are so many others that we could throw at him, Hack, but Cam Smith, former Players Champion, with the Live now, he withdrew from their tournament last week. So I don't quite know how healthy he is coming in to Augusta, but if he can roll it, you know how good he can be too.
Is there still the venom between the Live and the PGA like there was, you know, a year or so ago?
You know, I wish I knew for sure. I think it's a mixed bag of venom. I think in the beginning, PGA Tour guys were ticked at Live guys for you can describe it any way you want. I'm going to call it tuck and tail and haul and butt and get in the bag. But at the same time, so much has been learned since then. PGA Tour had to buck up and say, hey, we need to give our players more money. And so all of a sudden, there's this possibility that these two rivals are going to come together. I think May of last year is when all this news started to come out, and nothing's happened. Not a dang thing has happened. And so I think more of these guys are just looking at each other like, what the H? We hope soon they figure this out and we can all come and compete on a global stage. I think they like seeing each other. I think they like competing against one another. But the tour guys that were supposed to step up when the Rahms of the world, the Cams of the world left, they haven't. Listen to this, bro. Rory McIlroy has not won this year. Jordan Spieth has not won this year. Cantlay has not won. Hovland hasn't won. I mean, I can go down the line with big names in the game that you would think when there wasn't a Rahm, there wasn't a Cameron Smith, some of these other guys, they should have won by now, and they have not. They need to step up their game too.
Final moments with Joe Cowart. You get him every day on XL Primetime. Joe, before we get to your favorites and maybe a prediction, boy, the Masters knows what they're doing. I mean, I think they put Mickelson and Tiger together beginning tomorrow, right? I mean, what's that going to be like, that scene? And could either guy challenge to get into the weekend and maybe compete for this thing?
Well, I always tell you when we get to this week, there is something about playing this golf course with veterans that may not have the game that are so capable of just, I always use the phrase, they could play this Augusta National with their eyes closed. That's how good they are. Okay. I just feel like Mickelson, as bad as he's been, can go there and shoot a good number. Tiger is the wild card of all wild cards because we've only seen him play for basically a day and a half since he left Augusta last year. And so he's gone through more procedures, more rehab, more pain, you know, everything. And so I don't know what to expect from him, but yeah, the drama, they absolutely will create the storylines and drama with those two guys. There's a few other good ones. Brooks Koepka and Brian Harman are in the same grouping. Brian Harman, champion golfer, won the Open last year. Koepka won the PGA. That is one fast player and one really slow player. It's going to drive Koepka crazy. And so we'll see what happens there, if there's any chirping chatter between those two. That's a Live guy versus a Tour guy as well. Just know this, bro. There's just going to be so much good golf and so many good storylines. Weather may not hold up tomorrow, but it's supposed to be pretty good the rest of the way.
I've seen a lot of people picking Koepka, Joe, as we wrap up. What's your thought there? And then Scottie Scheffler, obviously, the way he's playing, he's got to be the betting favorite, correct?
Yeah, and I don't know what to say about Koepka other than he was there a year ago. He didn't quite get it done. There's no reason to think he can't. He rises to these majors. That's just what he's done. That's how his career has played out. He gets up for these big moments. Scotty definitely is capable of putting on another green jacket. There are a few other ones. Hideki has won here before. He's playing well. He's won this year, so you got to consider him one to watch. Wyndham Clark is a guy that's getting more and more recognition. He certainly could be in the conversation. I like to throw a few other guys out there that might be able to get it done. Matt Fitzpatrick, Tony Finau. Those are two guys that are capable of doing it. And like I said, Oberg is a guy that you should be watching because he is a young rising star on the PGA Tour for sure.
It begins in less than 12 hours at Augusta National, the 2024 Masters. It should be a heck of a lot of fun. You hear Joe Coward every day on XL Primetime from 2 to 4, and he's always kind enough to join us here on Hacker After Dark. Joe C., appreciate it, brother. We'll talk soon.
All right, dude. And by the way, Hack, you're looking good down at Disney, bro. You're looking good.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, approaching the 50-pound mark. Can you believe that? 50 pounds since February 20th.
That is awesome. I love that, dude. That's awesome.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Boy, big news this week with the Jacksonville Jaguars as Josh Allen gets paid here in Jacksonville. 5 years, $150 million. $88 million of that is guaranteed for the 26-year-old defensive end coming off 17 and a half sacks. He will now be in Jacksonville for the long term. Let's react to that. Let's talk about the AFC South and all the crazy movement there. Let's also talk a little Gator spring football with a former Florida Gator All-American, tight end Ben Troop. He also played 5 years in the National Football League, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Ben, how you doing?
Always good on being on with you, Ryan, man. It's always good to talk a little football with you.
Hey, Ben, we certainly appreciate it. You and I were talking earlier, boy, Josh Allen of the Jaguars, I know you're a fan of his. He got a huge payday from the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ben, your reaction to that contract?
I mean, I was super-duper happy for him because I think I agree with – I think, you know, one of your colleagues, Leon Searcy, I think he said to the best. He goes, look, if you're in that locker room and you see what he just got paid, it's got to motivate you to go out there and get it done both individually and collectively because – while I knew that was going to get it done, no one saw, you know, $150 million, 5 years, $88 guaranteed. Josh Allen, to me, is one of the most underrated players since he came into the league. You look at what he did for Kentucky, being a top five pick, and then 17 and a half sacks. I know that Myles Garrett won NFL Defensive Player of the Year. I know that T.J. Watt should have won it. But if there was a dark horse to win it, I would have given it to Josh Allen. Congratulations to him on a new deal.
You know, and it's interesting, too, and elaborate on that, because we talked to Leon earlier about it as well. The idea of taking care of your own in that locker room, Josh Allen only becomes the third Jaguar for the last decade plus first-round pick that got a second contract. Blake Bortles got one, Tyson Alualu got one, and that's it. The Jaguars have not drafted well at all, but now they do take care of their own. They re-signed Josh Allen to that mega deal. What is that message to his teammates in the locker room?
Number one, that they value him the same way he sees himself on the team, which is the most important. Everybody as a player gonna obviously overvalue yourself, you know, based on what you've done. But Josh Allen, I mean, forget the fact of what he did last year. He's been the consummate pro. He knew that he was gonna. He went from having Calais Campbell, you know, and Doc Quinn, all those type guys. And now everybody's gone. Now he's the elder statesman. And he's grooming Walker. You see what he was able to do. But that's the Coach Peterson effect. Coach Peterson seems to be a guy that understands, look, the best team retain their own. They don't go – yes, you try to build through free agency, but they already – the Jaguar way is built from current Jaguars, not future Jaguars. And I think a guy like Josh Allen who does everything the right way, who doesn't make waves, who went through the whole – you know, when everybody was – the previous regime had to go through that – with Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow and everybody, Jalen Ramsey's gone. So everybody that used to be on the defense, he's literally the only one left, and I'm just happy that he was able to do it in year four, 17 and a half sacks. It says a lot because, as Leon Searcy would say as well, nothing screams, I want to be a Jaguar more than we take care of one of our best Jaguars, definitely our best defensive Jaguar.
Former Florida Gator, All-American tight end Ben Troop here with us on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Ben, you mentioned Trayvon Walker to team with Josh Allen, and you add Eric Armstead to that D-line. I thought amidst the collapse of the Jaguars at the end of the year, one of the things that wasn't really talked about was Trayvon Walker. I think he ended up with 8 sacks over the last 2 months of the year, finished with 10 sacks in total. You now have a very happy Josh Allen. You have an improving Trayvon Walker. You had Eric Armstead, a multi-time Pro Bowler to that D-line. All of a sudden, Ben, they might have something cooking there in the front four.
Oh, they won the most dangerous D-lines going into 2024 before Eric Armstead even get on the field. I mean, the hardest thing to do in football is to get double-digit sacks. That's why guys that got – you could count. Yes, it's two starters, you know, so it's two starters on all 32 teams. Guys are not going to get close to 10 sacks. And to see Trayvon Walker do what he did from year one to year two speaks volumes, because he got better as the year went on. You added Eric Armstead on the inside, who with everything that San Francisco has done, I mean, letting him go and the Jaguars picking him up, you got a motivated Eric Armstead. You got a guy in Trayvon Walker who sees what happens with a guy like Josh Allen when you go out there and handle your business, definitely going into a contract year. Yes, it is going to be extremely scary in the AFC South that, let's face it, I mean, the best young offensive player, you know, in the AFC South, yeah, that's C.J. Stroud. The best young team right now was Jacksonville. You can give it to Houston at least for 1 year. But I think the best overall team is the Jacksonville Jaguars. I know it's going to depend on what goes on, you know, with Trevor Lawrence. I know they got certain players moving on to greener pastures with the Tennessee Titans. But, yeah, I think the D-line of Jacksonville is going to be one of the most scary. If Trayvon Walker can have 10.5 sacks without having an Eric Armstead that's taking on double teams on the inside, who knows what he'll do in year three.
Ben, final Josh Allen-related question. I want to branch out a little bit, and you alluded to it, and I completely agree with you. He is totally underrated, undervalued nationally, and I wonder if that's just Jacksonville, small market team, or is there something deeper than that? Why don't people appreciate Josh Allen like they should?
Because I think you just said it. I think it has to do with the entire AFC South. I mean, yeah, when I played, you had a Peyton Manning up there with Andy, but he had, you know, Reggie Wayne. He had Marvin Harrison. He had Dallas Clark. He had that offense. When you're talking about being in the AFC South, you have to do something spectacular in the playoffs to even get recognition year in and year out. Josh Allen, that's why he's as good as he is, because everybody wants to talk about, you know, I mean, they want to talk about the Bosa's, and rightfully so. You know, they want to talk about Myles Garrett, and rightfully so. 17.5 sacks. There are guys that some of the best pass rushers in NFL history never even scratched 15, let alone 17.5, but that's how Josh Allen wants it. And let's face it, his name is Josh Allen. We say Josh Allen, we think the Buffalo starting quarterback. That's what you think when you say Josh Allen. But when Josh Allen, I think, played against Josh Allen, I want to say the one with 17.5 sacks had a better game. So if you are Jacksonville, you love it. If you are opposing offenses, you hate it. Because like I said, he was one of the best players coming out when he came out of Kentucky. He is proven to be everything we thought he was coming out of the draft, going into year 5 in the league.
A couple of more for former Florida Gator, All-American tight end Ben Troop. Ben, you played for the Tennessee Titans, and, man, you want to talk about a team that spent some money this offseason. Obviously, Calvin Ridley, Legarius Sneed, Tony Pollard, Lloyd Cushenberry, Kenneth Murray, just to name a few. Look, as a former Titan, it's going to come down to how Will Levis plays. We understand that. But what is your thought on the spending spree in Nashville this offseason?
I mean, you give a lot of credit to my former teammate, you know, Rand Carthon. People are saying that what is he doing under year one? He ain't have no money to spend. You look at the difference in year two. Yes, it's going to hurt not seeing Derrick Henry there. But, you know, you talk about Pollard. You talk about, getting Calvin Ridley. You talk about getting Sneed coming over from – Kansas City. I think the thing about the Titans is they're looking around saying, hey, man, we're competing for third and fourth right now. Because, yes, Jacksonville laid an egg at the end of the year, but they're still the best team in the AFC South. Yes, nobody saw C.J. Stroud doing what he did in year one, even though, you know, they go out there and get Stephon Diggs for him. I think Rand Carthon is saying, look, if we don't get it going right now, it's going to be – because nowadays, quarterback or not, you ain't got 2 and 3 years to rebuild. You got to do it right now, especially we got money to spend now. He looks good, right? Everything looks good right now because you are spending money. But Jacksonville is going to come into 2024 playing some really, 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 you know, disrespectful football because of what didn't happen in 2023. C.J. Stroud got added a weapon. Anthony Richardson is coming off an injury. Dare I say this, AFC South, Will Levis is definitely the fourth best quarterback in the league, taking that away. I think Anthony Richardson is better than him. C.J. Stroud is proving it. And I still think Trevor Lawrence is the best quarterback in the division. They've looked real good in the offseason, but as you know, Ryan, it don't mean the thing if you can't get them dubs. They're trying to look good right now, but we'll see what happens come to fall.
The absolutely crazy thing, I think you and I talked about this a few months ago, the AFC South in August of 23 was thought to be, Ben, maybe the most boring division in football, right? The worst division in football. That narrative was out there. Here we sit in April of 24, and I'm not sure if there is a more intriguing division coming in. You mentioned Anthony Richardson coming back, all the things the Texans have done, all the things the Titans have done, all the things the Jaguars have done. Man alive, this division went from quote-unquote boring to pretty interesting very, very quickly.
And I think that's what you have to. Not saying that these other teams are trying to make sure that they keep yes, they are trying to make sure they keep up with the other teams in the division, but they know we are better collectively. Anthony Richardson makes them look sexy. C.J. Stroud, offensive rookie of the year. Will Levis, he loses Derrick Henry, but he has Calvin Ridley. You know, he has Tony Pollard. And the Jags are the Jags. I mean, the Jags right now are the best team in the division on paper because they got the talent. Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, Eric Armstead, Trevor Lawrence. You know, I mean, and the list goes on and on and on. You know, Evan Ingram. I mean, you know, they got the talent, and I think the thing now is, do they have staying power collectively? Because what you lack individually as a team can elevate you as a division. I mean, and I don't know who's going to be the best team in 2024. I think everybody – look, D'Amico Ryans, I mean, a guy that got drafted by the Texans, he knows that, man, we more than superseding expectations, and they probably going to only have Stephon Diggs for a year because he's definitely going to want to hit the free market after this year to get some more money. I'm looking forward to the entire division, Ryan, because it's anybody's ball game. Trevor, I mean, like I said, CJ is nice. Trevor Lawrence got to have a bounce back season. Will Levis, they're going to use by committee to help him. Anthony Richardson is a freak of nature at the quarterback position, but he got to stay healthy. I think the AFC South, it ain't what it used to be, but I think it got a shot to get back to the days of people are looking forward to actually watching the AFC South or in division and out of division.
Ben, as we wrap up, I want to end with the Gators, but final thought on the NFL and back to Jacksonville for a moment. You mentioned Evan Ingram, Travis Etienne, and right now the top three receivers are Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis from Buffalo, who the Jaguars brought in, and Zay Jones. A lot of talk down here about Brian Thomas of LSU. A lot of talk about A.D. Mitchell of Texas. They need to add one more wide receiver. Do you see it that way? Do they need to add another weapon for Trevor, even with Ingram, Kirk, Davis, Etienne, and Zay Jones?
Yes, because you could never have enough weapons. And the more weapons you have, you can't pinpoint on anybody. I think Etienne is the key to that entire offense because I think what he brings in the running game and what he adds in the passing game only adds to the, you know, to that offense taking another step. But the thing about it, Trevor Lawrence, is no matter what you say, Gabe Davis coming over from Buffalo is incredible, but you want to add another Calvin Ridley type guy that can play both inside and outside. I do think in this draft you have a lot of receivers to choose from. Yes, I am biased when I am saying this, but there's a guy right down the road, 45 minutes down the road in the Ricky Pearsall. I think that's the guy you want to give a look at because he can play on the inside and the outside. He can run routes, and I think with what Trevor Lawrence needs, he needs a guy that's interchangeable. Yes, you got a Christian Kirk. Yes, you got a Zay Jones. Yes, you got a Gabe Davis. Yes, you got an Evan Ingram coming off a 100-catch season. You add a route runner like a guy like Ricky Pearsall. Doesn't have to be him. I think it makes that offense even more potent because the thing about Trevor Lawrence is he is the franchise guy. He's going to get a big-time deal either this year or next year. You don't want to put everything on him. Give him a guy that can get open on first, second, and even third down. I think you add another receiver. I think that makes the Jacksonville offense even more potent coming into 2024.
Former All-American tight end at the University of Florida, Ben Troop. Ben, you mentioned Ricky Pearsall. That's one of the guys your alma mater needs to replace, along with Trevor Etienne and other guys that departed. Orange and Blue game on Saturday. What are you looking for out of the Orange and Blue game this Saturday afternoon?
I mean, I would be remiss if I wasn't looking forward to seeing DJ Lagway like everybody else is. I mean, the kid is about as good as advertised coming out of high school, Gatorade National Player of the Year. I mean, Arliss Boardingham, Hayden, Hayden Hansen, those guys at the tight end position. But I'm really looking forward to seeing this defense, specifically our DBs. I mean, around the last two or three years, our DBs have been awful, not individually but collectively. Can't track the ball in the air, can't make one-on-ones, can't make tackles on third down to get off the field. I want to see Will Harris and the Will Harris, regime, coming to the forefront. They don't have to look spectacular. They just can't look bad. DJ Lagway, the tight ends, and I want to see our defense, particularly, like I said, the DB position, because like I said, if we can get them DBs to find a way to just play, complementary football, I mean, we make a bowl game last year and we win, enough games to be bowl eligible. Let me see them DBs. Let me see them tight ends. Let me see DJ Lagway. And let me make sure everybody comes out injury free.
You've played at the University of Florida at the highest level. You've obviously followed the Gators. You now have a podcast, 84 Reasons. I go back all the way to 1990. That's as far back in the memory banks as I can go, Ben, following Gator football. Can you ever remember on paper a schedule that looks this daunting?
I haven't. And the thing about it is, when you talk about a guy in Billy Napier, yes, he's showing a little bit more, oomph this year, going into his fourth year. Hasn't really been what everybody expected. But six wins with this schedule might as well be – it's not undefeated, but it might as well be 8-9 wins, because when you look at it, Ole Miss comes in right – at the end of the year. You talk about LSU. You talk about, Texas. You talk about Georgia. And the list goes on and on. He finds a way to get the six or seven wins this year. He's definitely going to be here in 2025, no matter what happens. But he looks better going into 2025, because I don't know what Florida did or what they didn't do, but don't do it ever again. This schedule is brutal. If he can find a way to get the gauntlet, get through the gauntlet and win seven games this year, I think Billy Napier has proven, even before Texas and Oklahoma officially come to the SEC, that he's ready moving forward.
Former All-American tight end at the University of Florida, Ben Troop, we invite you to check out his podcast, 84 Reasons. Ben, I thought I saw you had Jack Caglione on the latest podcast, correct?
Yeah, I did, man. Jack is obviously, this kid is going to be a top five pick, top 10 pick at worst coming out this year. But a guy with that much power, I mean, obviously, I ain't never seen Ohtani before. I don't think we'll ever see another Ohtani again, but the closest thing to it, as far as like before he become pro, is Jack Caglione. I think he's already got 17 home runs this season, probably looking to definitely lead college baseball in home runs again. When you talk about a lefty, 6'5", 250 pounds, plays first base when he's not pitching, a starting pitcher and hit for power. I had to get Cags on, super duper, reserve kid, of Tampa. Coming out of Plant High School, this is going to be his last year in orange and blue, so we might as well get a snapshot of it. But, yeah, man, had to get him on, man. Really, 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 really polished kid. I'm looking forward to watching him throughout the rest of the season.
Ben Troop. Ben, always appreciate the conversation, man. Thank you as always. Let's do it again after the NFL draft, and we'll see where the dust has settled when it comes to the AFC South. Thank you, my friend.
Ryan, always a pleasure being on with you big time.
And thank you to my buddy Ben Troop, former All-American tight end at the University of Florida, for joining us tonight here on Hacker After Dark. As what a day it was here in Jacksonville. Josh Allen, a brand new five-year contract, $88 million guaranteed. It's worth up to $150 million in total as Josh Allen becomes the Jaguars' first $100 million man. And look, it was important for Trent Baalke to get this done. And I got to tell you, man, you look at it now, obviously the Calvin Ridley thing aside, you get Josh Allen done, you re-sign Ezra Cleveland, you restructure Brandon Sheriff, you get Foye Oluokun signed long-term, you bring in Gabe Davis and Mitch Morse and Eric Armstead and Darnell Savage and Ronald Darby and Devin Duvernay, just go on and on and on down the line. It has been quite the offseason here in Jacksonville. And as we talked to Mike Gennetti of Spot Track earlier, with this Josh Allen extension that takes the franchise tag off of him, that clears up some cap room in 2024. And in Gennetti's thoughts, and he's one of the guys, right? In fact, he might be the guy. He's the founder of Spot Track. It clears up a decent amount of cap room if, and it's a big if the Jaguars want to explore potentially trading for a wide receiver. So we will see what happens on that front. But that'll just about do it. It has been a crazy busy show tonight, as days like this are, with news from the Jaguars regarding Josh Allen. Again, thank you to Ben Troop, former All-American tight end at the University of Florida. Thank you to my buddy Joe Cowher. You hear him every day on XL Primetime as we talk the Jaguars. And, oh, by the way, the Masters, which tees off in less than 12 hours from Augusta National. Thank you to Leon Searcy, former Pro Bowl offensive tackle for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He as well, like Joe, you hear him every day on XL Primetime. Really appreciated Leon's thoughts on the Josh Allen contract extension. And as I mentioned back in hour number one, Mike Jannetty of Spot Track talking not only about the Allen extension, but what that may mean for the Jaguars moving forward, potentially adding some more pieces to this 2024 puzzle. We will be back tomorrow night on a Thursday, and we will do it all over again beginning at 8 o'clock. Casey Dobson was your producer tonight in for Dylan Denmark. Casey, great job as always. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Wednesday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Wednesday evening. And we will talk to you again tomorrow night on a Thursday beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.